It's showtime.
Conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, a brand new month off and running here at the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. Always go there for all of your podcasting needs. Whatever platform you're listening on, we'll make sure you can get the Horn on that platform. That's because of just how doggone awesome Brother Deacon Asa truly is. And both streams are streaming along, and we're still running on the workaround here. Hopefully the new power supply will arrive by post sometime, maybe tomorrow, because God forbid in South Central West Virginia a human being would ever need a power supply for a desktop PC. You can't just go out to the store and buy one. Used to be you could. You can't anymore. So we'll wait and then see if a new power supply fixes the old streaming PC. Fingers are permanently crossed, and the skin is growing together from crossing them for so long. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is the third day of February 2020. That means there's only 26 days of February remaining. And remember, we get our word February from, of course, Latin, because 70% of the English language is Latin in nature. And for those who always wondered, and I don't know if anybody else is as weird as I am, but I did, Eugene Finnerman, a dear friend, former Jeopardy champion, and knower of many, many things, sent out a reminder note on the first day of February, and he said, "The similarity between February and febrile is not just my feverish imagination." See, that's smart. In the old Roman calendar, Februarius was the last month of the year. That's in the era BJ, before Jeebus. It was the 12th month, February. And since it was the last month of the year, Romans, back before they decided to make the first month of the year the anniversary of Jesus getting his little pee-pee chopped on, well, They made Februarius. They named it after the Latin word februare, which is the infinitive verb of purify, to purify. So in the final month of the year, if you were a Roman, an old Roman in old Rome, you did ritual acts of purification to make sure you kept the gods off your back for the coming year, which begins on March 1, named, of course, after Mars, because, well, March means that in the Italian peninsula, March means that you can, it's then decent enough weather to get your crops in the ground and then go off to war. Yep. As Eugene points out, of course, the gods would expect payment for their favor, and mere vows of future virtue would not impress or convince a Roman deity. No, Romans had a sort of contractual relationship with their gods. It was strictly mechanical. I do this, you do that. No, the repentant were obliged to sacrifice animals. Of course, the Romans weren't the only ones to use God worship as a reason for a barbecue. I mean, go all the way back into Genesis. And, well, there's Abel bringing barbecue, and fucking Cain shows up with the goddamn quinoa salad, and God doesn't like quinoa salad. God likes the smell of barbecue. And so that's how you get the first murder, at least according to the book of Genesis. But the dead oxen, Eugene notes, and sheep were not all left to rot on the altar. Very few religions encourage cholera. No, with all the appropriate theatrics, the sacrificed animals were burned, and so presumably were the sins of the penitents. The purification required fire, and the name February referred to the burning, Fovere. We still have a February, although it's generally dismissed as a runt nuisance, and we still refer to fever and febrile. Now, however, when we're the burning sacrifice, we don't feel holier for it. Welcome to the climate emergency. That bit of trivia, again, brought to you by Eugene Finnerman, dear friend. So, yeah, we're at the beginning of February. We will slog through it here in the Northern Hemisphere. And we will be aided along the way by the intellectual and emotional stirrings of Black History Month, which does help to make February considerably more bearable. Otherwise, it's just a long, slow grind somewhere between the end of football and the beginning of baseball, and with a little bit of basketball and bowling thrown in for good measure. So this is a leap year, of course, so we've got 26 more days of February. Nonetheless, this program always begins with gratitude. This program is no different. And so, consequently, we have thanks to send out to Shorty in L.A., to our friends at Home Dirts, to Terry in Amherst, where only the H is silent, to Rusty and Lauren out on the, who is not out on the frozen Canadian mountain wasteland, but I think is somewhere in Central America, last I checked. Lauren gets around. And to Joseph, and thanks to Thomas at FYI Nation. Thank you to Rocco and Elizabeth. Thank you to Reggie. Thank you to John and Janice. Thank you to Stephen. Thank you to Gene and Ann. Those are our subscribers and random contributors for the first 3 days of February thus far. And so now remember, it's the first day, it's the first program of a new month. So that means that Bruce's Memorial Challenge is on the table. Kindly brought to you by Laborman and Ralphs and an anonymous contributor, so that our first day gets us off to a running start. And if we can raise the first day's fundraising, $200, then those three will happily double it. And that is tremendous, because new month brings new bills. And it's great not to start the month in a damned hole. So there it is, 10 at 20, 20 at 10, however we do it. If we can raise $200 this evening, then the challenge gets met and we are off and running. Thank you again to Laborman and Ralphs and our anonymous friend. Thank you very kindly indeed. If you want to help out, just run over to headon.live, click on the contribute tab, and away you'll go. It's easy, and if you'd like to become a new subscriber, you can always check that little box and click it and forget it. And if you're a new $10 a month subscriber, well, damn, you're out all of about 4 sticks out of a 5-stick package of gum for every program. No, I'm sorry. Not quite 3 sticks out of a 5-stick package of gum. Yeah. So, I mean, I hate to think of members of the Horn Family Community Congregation going without its juicy fruit. And we're talking about Wrigley's gums here. The expensive old school stuff like Blackjack and Clove and Beeman's, that's even more expensive. But, you know, your average pack of Spearmint, Juicy Fruit, Big Red, yeah, it's not quite 2.5 sticks out of a 5-stick pack of gum. So, there you go. Anyway, the month has begun, and if you can't tell, I have I'm feeling considerably better. Agnes still isn't over the hump, but I'm considerably better than I was on Friday. I'm not quite as crawly as I was that day, as in crawling around on the floor. I'm still a little snorfly, the occasional sneeze wandering by. But I think there's still a little bit of upper respiratory. But I really did. I laid low in a big way over the weekend, and rested and consumed copious amounts of just virulently spicy Tom Yum Gong. And there I posted a picture of it over on Facebook because I'm weird like that. I post pictures of food. But when my friend Ging heard I was feeling poorly, she told me to come by on Saturday and she would have a huge pot of Tom Yum Gong for me. And she said she would make it for me Thai spicy, which she did. And I think it's delicious. God, tangy and tart with all those wonderful Southeast Asian flavors. Of course, with the contribution of massive amounts of chili from the New World, which only gets to Southeast Asia sometime in the 16th century and changes food ways forever all over Asia and all over the world. And so I think in a way, I chilied this crud into submission. And the other thing that works magnificently, I will add, is sake heated to the point of being almost too hot to run down your gullet. I even got Agnes to try some, and it perked her up considerably. So, you know, if that's something you can deal with, it works. I mean, there's a reason that all these nasty-tasting cold remedies have alcohol in them. It helps. In moderation. So the upshot of it is, I feel better. I feel better and I feel worse. The other part of laying low on that particular weekend is that, yes, Friday was my birthday, but ever since February 1st, 2007, my birthday kind of has changed because, well, the following day is the anniversary of my father's passing. And this is not to make this particular program a downer. It's not. These are just facts. This is part of being a human being alive on planet Earth, the only planet in the entire universe that we know for certain supports life. It's a hell of a burden to bear, especially when your species, so many of them, are actively involved in trying to make sure the Earth can't support life anymore. But anyway, my father, knowing he was on his way out the door, I think willed himself to live into February the 1st so that he wouldn't be dying on my birthday. Because he wished me happy birthday the day before. And in the wee early morning hours of February 1st, he was in hospice, and I held him in my arms as he breathed his last. And he fought and he struggled like the strong, strong man he was for that last breath. And because he was dying largely of COPD, it was a hateful struggle indeed. And I learned then that of all the myriad and awful ways there are to die, dying like a fish out of water must surely rank up there. And so birthdays and day after birthdays are hard on me now. But we pick up and we continue onward, because that is what the dead would wish for the living. And so we got through the weekend, and then today, well, it's Moran Monday, you know. Yeah, of course you know. That's why you tune into this program. It's Moran Monday.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, 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 step right up, you will not believe your ears, it's Moran Monday on the Horn. Yes indeed, friends and neighbors, it's right here, behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas. We've got them all for you, right-wing Morans of every stripe and every variety. They're all here for your amazement, your shock, and your disgust. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger-eaters, libertarians, Trumpanzees, maggots, Republicans, all waiting for your viewing displeasure, or this being a radio program, your listening displeasure. Yes, indeed, you can't tell the morons without a program, and this is the program that tells the morons you just can't tell them much. Why, for less than the price of 2.5 sticks of gum out of a 5-stick pack, you can make sure Moran Monday is here for you right just off the Carnival Midway each and every Monday and every other program throughout any given month. Indeed, indeed, indeed. Yes, only moments ago, there you were, standing on the Midway with a handful of ping pong balls, lobbing them at goldfish bowls in the futile, vainglorious hope that somehow you, yes, you, would be the one to take home a horrifying-looking little baby iguana. Now, you didn't have so much luck there, but there's no luck involved in the Moran Monday tent. No, there's not. There's not at all. Just come right through, step right up, with the caveat, of course, because caveats always apply, that you keep a close hand on bracelets, watches, rings, jewelry of all sort, necklaces, earrings, those strange little spikes that women put in the side of their nose, and I don't know where the post is, and don't boogers collect on that? I don't know. I don't even like to think about it, and I only do once a week on Moran Monday. Mm-hmm. Yes, keep a close watch on children, small dogs, even that iguana that you somehow miraculously won throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls. Keep an eye on that, as well as European-style messenger bags, because after all, the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morons. You will. You will. You will. And so, with the Moran Monday announcement, we wander off into the wide, wide world of Moranity. Everybody, or almost everybody, it's almost impossible not to know who won the Super Bowl. I watched it. Yay, team, I guess. It's especially, at least according to Nitwit Nero, it's especially gratifying for the residents of the state of Kansas, you know, where Kansas City is. You know he did that, right? That then spawned a whole host of memes of the little Sharpie nipple drawn from Kansas into Missouri. Former Democratic senator from the state of Missouri, Claire McCaskill, got so wrought that she tweeted, "It's Kansas City, Missouri, you stone-cold idiot." You know, which he is.
And there's no way you could ever actually grandfather Nitwit Nero out of Moran Mundi. It's almost like it exists. It was almost prophetic the way we created Moran Mundi, so that someday, because we knew that someday there would be a president who would feature so largely in it. But we're not going to begin with that. No. Instead, we'll begin with news that is rocking the broadcast world. I told you, there was a reason I mentioned the account of my father's passing. Because, well, being a first-hand witness to someone leaving this planet, it's not as common as it once was, because in our state of what we like to think is civilization, we do everything we can to put a great deal of both existential and physical distance between ourselves and death, which is kind of weird, because it's the one thing that every living thing on this planet shares. I saw over the weekend a meme of a carrot. A carrot that looked like it had and you know, the carrots grow weird sometimes, kind of like potatoes do. And this particular carrot had attached to it a sort of, I guess you would call it, misformation. Not a malformation, because it wasn't bad. It was just more carrot. And as we all know, carrots are divine. You get a dozen for a dime. It's magic. Right. You don't get a dozen for a dime anymore. But it looked like a little baby carrot hugging its mommy carrot. Carrot. Clinging to it. And it even appeared, they both appeared to have little faces. And the caption said, captured here for the first time, the heartbreaking scene of a baby carrot clinging to its mother before some vegan eats. I laughed. Yeah, you know, some other program might queue up, you know, Blue Oyster Cult doing Don't Fear the Reaper, whatever. But it is truly the most ubiquitous of all facts of life on this planet, the ending thereof. Humanity has spent untold amounts of its existence trying to sort out what happens afterward, when probably the simplest answer is precisely nothing. The English philosopher Bertrand Russell, upon being asked, well, Professor, what do you think is going to happen when you die? And he looked at the fool who asked him the question and said, I'll rot. Yeah. But nonetheless, we've made up stories of the cities with streets paved of gold and gates of pearl and mother of pearl and Godfrey Daniel, mother of pearl. And those stories were concocted by people who lived in this earthly realm in states of constant filth and dirt and dust and yuck, and their only dream was to go somewhere clean when they died. Oddly enough, cultures that arose in places that weren't filthy and dirty and dusty and baked and hateful didn't come up with cities with streets paved of gold and jasper or whatever the fuck that is. No. But it comes for us all. And there was a big announcement today, by none other than the oxymoron himself, Flush Flemball, who said that despite the $50 million a year that he's been paid, year after year after year, that he has been diagnosed with an advanced form of lung cancer. Now, this man is a professional liar, so it may not even be true. Maybe we'll get into the details of that in a moment. But with the anniversary that I just marked over the weekend, when I saw that news, it occasioned some thought. Because the bottom line is, in addition to wondering what happens after, hint, nothing, there's also the, what makes people so fearful of it isn't, Shakespeare wrote about it, for Christ's sakes, that land from which no one has ever, yada, 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 and what dreams may come, and to be or not to be, whatever. But it's not the actual being dead part. It's the getting there part. And that's what we fear. Because to one degree or another, we've all of us got a little bit of moron in us. That's what scares us. And so, with that in mind, and since Flush Flimball is a big golfer, remember back when he became a junkie, he blamed it on hurting his neck while playing golf. I got to thinking about something, and this is also in conjunction kind of with the Super Bowl, because there seems to be unanimity in the idea that Bill Murray's Jeep commercial with the Groundhog Day groundhog was by far the best ad of the evening. It was an example of the ad maker's art, a little teeny tiny movie. And it really, the dialogue was, to the extent that a 60-second ad can be sparkling, the dialogue was sparkling. It was truly a wonderful ad, which we will all forget in about a week. Although I do confess, and this is an unpaid product placement, I'm completely taken with that Jeep Gladiator truck. I like trucks, and the design on that one's just wonderful, even if it does only have a 6-cylinder engine. Still, the design is ever so engaging. And kudos to whoever came up with the idea and got Bill Murray on board, and they must have paid him a fortune, and good for him. But it got me to thinking about, in conjunction with the Flush Flimball news, it got me to thinking about the film that really put him on the map. I'm talking, of course, about Caddyshack. And Carl, the assistant greenskeeper's tall tale about his interaction with the llama. Flowing robes, the majesty, bald, stunning. And explaining to the young caddy that which set Carl, the assistant greenskeeper, apart from the other caddies.
So we finish 18, and he's going to stiff me. And I say, hey, llama, hey, how about a little something, for the effort, And he says, there won't be any money. But when you die, on your deathbed, you will receive total consciousness. So I got that going for me, which is nice.
Which is nice. And that's what we worry about. Because there are so many horrible ways to go. It is said that on the night before the Ides of March, 44 BCE, that at a dinner party, Gaius Julius Caesar threw
the ancient Romans had a symposium with every dinner. You couldn't just sit there and stuff your face. You had to speak with some degree of intelligence about things. And I'm not sure who it is, maybe Suetonius, says that the topic that evening turned to what is the best way to die. And when it came Caesar's turn, Caesar's answer was, the method matters not, so long as it is quick. And of course, the next day, at about sunup or a little after, legend tells us that he got up, left the public housing where he lived. I mean, it was literally called public housing, Domus Publica. It was attached to the Temple of the Vestal Virgins. And with his entourage, he walked through the Forum. He was headed over to the Campus Martius, to the Theater of Pompey, and the temple there of Venus Victrix, because the Curia, where the Senate sat, had been recently burned down in rioting. And again, according to myth or legend, the old man who had told him to beware of the Ides of March, as he passed him, he said, "Well, the Ides of March are here, old man." The old man looked at Caesar and said, "But not yet gone." And he gets to the Senate House there, attached to the Theater of Pompey, and of course, his manner of going is not quick. He was stabbed repeatedly, and the person who examined his body afterwards said, he would have survived every one of the blows except the last one. Which, of course, down through history has been attributed to Brutus, who was, of course, the son of the woman who was not his wife, whom he had been banging for a couple of decades. Sister to one Marcus Porcius Cato, who was incensed by it all. But Marcus Porcius Cato was long since dead, having killed himself in North Africa by disemboweling himself rather than receive the mercy of Julius Caesar. Some people are just assholes. Wow, what a digression, huh? But if he's not lying, and I think there's at least a 50% chance that Flush Flimball is lying, because, well, he's Flush Flimball, and he's spent his entire radio career as a liar. Well, then he's likely worried and hoping that at best, well, the last thing Rush Limbaugh wants is perfect consciousness on his deathbed. Because then he would have to realize that the short time of his life on Earth has been utterly, completely, and totally wasted, consumed and burned away in bigotry and misogyny and racism and hate. Yeah, I wouldn't want that to be the last thing I was thinking about, so he's probably hoping that, well, again, if he's not lying, and the time comes, that he will be, well, it'll be kind of like going home, and I don't mean in a Pearly Gates kind of way, I mean in a hospice kind of way. They'll have him fired up with so many opiates and opioids, he won't know where the fuck he is. And it'll be the best thing that happened to him since he had to kick it by going out to that horse farm in Arizona and petting horses while he got over his OxyContin Jones from back in the days when he would fill a cigar box with thousands of dollars and send his household servant out into the mean streets of South Florida to come back with a cigar, with the cigar box empty of money but full of opioids purchased on the street, at which point he could crunch up one of those OxyContin pills for the refreshing burst of flavor. I come not to praise Rush Limbaugh, but to bury him. Because, as usual, social media was just chock-a-block
with unmitigated bullshit about how we all have to be nice to Flush Flimball because he's announced that he has fucking cancer. As if Flush Flimball having cancer, it was somehow more horrifying and more terrifying and more awful than anybody else having cancer. You know what? He says he's not seeking sympathy, but you don't make a news story out of it unless you are. And there were, of course, no small number of people on social media advising, especially those of us on this side of the political aisle, to be nice to Rush in his hour of grief. Rick Wilson, by the way, we all laugh at Rick Wilson because Rick Wilson's really good for a giggle these days because he's a never Trump Republican, you see. I mean, okay, just an aside. We all watched the closing arguments today, right? Right? Okay, maybe we'll talk about that in a little bit if you want to. But I assume that everybody saw that, and so I got some clips, but I'm not going to lead with it this evening because, God, it's like leading with dry humping. Brilliant words, especially from Adam Schiff, but full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. Not because of the content of Adam Schiff's remarks, but because of the fact that, well, you know, in the book it says, let those with ears to hear, let them hear. Well, he was speaking to a room of with 57 people in it who had neither ears to hear nor eyes to see. But anyway, Rick Wilson, the never Trump Republican, who in his day did some sleazy, filthy things. Right up there with Lee Atwater, nasty. And who was, of course, invited on Bill Maher over the weekend, or Friday night, and said they've got his new organization has some really nasty surprises planned to run against Donald Trump, at which we all rubbed our little hands gleefully together and cackled and said, do it, do it. You know, it's like asking Darth Vader to, for once, use his powers for good. You know, don't try to blow up the forest world of Endor. Go blow up that planet with all the shitty people on it. Yeah. Not a surprising number of Star Wars references in the last couple of weeks. But anyway. So, Rick Wilson advises, he who has slimed so many people, took to Twitter to say, I just heard the news that Rush Limbaugh has advanced lung cancer. I'm going to show you how this should be done. I wish Rush a speedy and complete recovery from his cancer. Human being pro tip, don't wish cancer on anyone, even on your adversaries. To call Rush Limbaugh an adversary is to call Ebola the sniffles. Between Rush Limbaugh and Ronald Wilson Reagan, old 666 himself, those two human beings are probably responsible for north of 90% of what's wrong with this country today. That's an aside within an aside within an aside. But cancer is awful. I wasn't quite aware enough to realize just how grave things were when my mother was diagnosed with breast cancer when I was 9 years old. What I understood was that it meant that my beloved grandmother was going to be coming down and we were going to be spending some time together, and I loved every minute with her. She took care of me while my mother was recovering, but my mother was not supposed to recover. the mortality rates for breast cancer were horrifying back in the early 70s. But she had a tremendous will and maybe some luck. And she would survive for another, 24 years. Until medical malpractice took her out. That's an aside within an aside within an aside. But Rick Wilson wants to make sure that nobody's mean to Rush Limbaugh. Because you don't wish cancer on anybody. And you know what? I can honestly say I've never wished cancer on anybody. Among diseases, it probably terrifies us more than virtually any other, because we have so because the so many people have experienced losing a loved one to it, and it is awful. And there's even a hashtag, fuck cancer. But you can't just ask, tell me not to wish it on somebody and not have me think about all the people who didn't get posts from Rick Wilson when they got their diagnosis. I know my voice is reaching people right now who have dealt with it, who have had it, who've lost someone to it. And it probably resonates when he says, don't wish it on anybody. And most anybody who's dealt with it was, yep, I agree. But that wishing him a speedy recovery part? And this all comes from just being who I am and having done what I've done for the last two decades. I thought immediately of my dear friend and mentor, Judy Bonds. I don't recall her getting any fucking get-well cards from Rush goddamn Limbaugh or any other goddamn Republican when cancer, unleashed into her world by the coal industry, was ravaging her body. No. Not a one. I don't recall a big wreath in memoriam with our condolences signed the West Virginia Coal Association at her memorial after cancer had stolen her from us. A hell of a lot younger than Rush Limbaugh and way too young altogether. No. And between Rick Wilson and Rush Limbaugh both, they have stood arm in arm and shoulder to shoulder through the years with the very people and the very industries that have set cancer loose in Central Appalachia. They like to call it Appalachia. It's Appalachia. That set cancer loose in Appalachia to ravage like some sort of fucking stalking serial killer through our hills and hollers. So you'll please to forgive me if I can't work up a hell of a sad. I mean, nil nisi bonum and ask not for whom the bell tolls and all of that entirely humanistic horse shit. It's not horse shit, it's real and it's decent. But I find it interesting that it's always our side that's being told to be nice while people, while the maggots go to rallies with
T-shirts that say, fuck your feelings. That's the reality. They get to go galumphing along, being as hateful as they want, and trying to hurt as many as they can, as often as they can, and we have to be nice. Kumbaya, my lord. Kumbaya. But let us stumble, and they'll be on us in a minute. Kicking and clawing. It'll be that scene out of Galaxy Quest. Have you people ever even watched the show? And then there's the reality of what health care means for somebody who knocks down $50 million a year versus someone who's lucky to knock down $15,000. I mean, the reality of life in America. Rush Limbaugh is in the top one-tenth of 1%. Of wealth possessors in the United States. And when you're that rich, there are treatments available that sunshine you and me won't ever get, but that are reserved for our betters. Even with something like universal single-payer health care, you won't get what the people who can pay cash and never count the loss will get. There are just places you won't get to go that they do. And so I don't think it's a violation of nil nisi bonum or ask not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee, to point out that Rush Limbaugh will have everything available to him that medical science can possibly offer. Medical science will bend over backwards. Medical science will do whatever it possibly can to save him and save his toxic, hate-filled voice and keep it on the air for Merkel. Not quite the same thing as what happens when you're sitting in the gown in the examining room at the oncologist's in, say, Charleston, West Virginia, and they come in with the bad news. Because in that case, you just know it's a death sentence. And you'd better bust your ass to get your affairs in order if you haven't already, because you ain't got much time. Because you're a fucking hillbilly, and you don't fucking matter. You don't count. It doesn't even matter if you're Judy Bonds and have reshaped the mindset, the attitudes of an entire region. If you spent nearly as much time on the road as you have at home, trying to change the world for the better, to make the world a better place, to wake people up. If you've done it in San Francisco and Los Angeles and 1,000 different college campuses and even spoken at the UN, when the time comes that conversation with the doctor comes, you know what the outcome is. Randy in PA says it would be ironic, Bob, if his multi-millions couldn't save him. Well, they won't. There has never been a human being on this planet whose wealth in the end has saved him. Since I was getting my Roman on earlier, I'll mention Marcus Licinius Crassus. He was and may be to this day the wealthiest human being who's ever lived on this planet. He met his end, we are told, by having molten liquid gold poured down his throat because he was so hungry for it. A Parthian king did that to him. That's why Caesar was headed out to conquer the Parthians when he met his pointed end. No, his money didn't save him. Money's never saved anybody. But it can prolong, and we may rest assured that medical science will do whatever is necessary to try to prolong the life of Rush Limbaugh. But there's a pretty good bet that he won't be receiving that perfect consciousness that Carl the assistant greenskeeper was talking about, which he had, which was nice. But there won't be any of that for Flush. Robert says, big cigar fan, maybe fatally so. Actions have consequences. You don't inhale cigars. There's as good a chance that living where he does, this happens all over the world, that the same toxic particulate matter that takes out hillbillies is taking out Rush Limbaugh. But that's the other thing. It is not speaking ill of the cancer stricken to point out that he spent his life trying to make cancer happen more often to more people here in Central Appalachia. And took his vitriol so far as to refer to people like Judy as environmental wackos, my friends. They're just environmental wackos. They want to take your coal-fired electricity away from you, my friends, because they're communists. Before you get ahead of yourself, Bob, asks Brother Deacon Asa, will Flush Flimball put the lotion on itself when it does finally walk through the pearly gates? Asking for a group of sycophants. Well, let's just put it this way. If that afterlife exists, I'm guessing where he's going, you won't have any trouble getting a light. And that was probably the most sickening part of the whole disclosure, is that, as seems ever to be the case, he's found his own altar call. Because when he was braying about it earlier today on his program, and by the way, in the Fox News write-up, they put it to Talk Radio King Rush Limbaugh stunned his 20 million member audience Monday. He doesn't have a 20 million member audience. He has 20 million listeners per week. That's roughly the same 4 million people five times a week. It's not 20 million discrete or indiscrete Americans. He closed out saying, this day has been one of the most difficult days in recent memory for me, because I've known this moment was coming. I'm sure that you all know by now that I really don't like talking about myself. Y'all, shut the fuck up. If there was a God in heaven, that would have brought down a lightning bolt. How many years of with talent on loan from God? Well, here's the margin call, Rush. With half my brain tied behind my back, I'll make it simple so the people in Rio Linda can understand. Call me back when you get that bone out of your nose. The incessant mocking of people of color. But he doesn't like to talk about himself. Horseshit. And I don't like making things about me. Double horseshit. Second lightning bolt in case the first one missed. One thing that I know that has happened over the 31-plus years of this program is that there has been an incredible bond that had developed between all of you and me. He wouldn't speak to one of his fucking knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing followers short of them getting down on their knees on the street, kissing his hairy toes and saying, "Megadiddos from down here on the pavement, Rush, I just love you." But then he got to the crux of his big moment. I'm ready for my close-up, Max. So I have to tell you something today that I wish I didn't have to tell you. It's a struggle for me because I had to inform my staff earlier today. Staff. Oh, a staff. I can't help but feel that I'm letting everybody down. The upshot is that I've been diagnosed with advanced lung cancer. Agnes, you did not just giggle. Okay, she said, yes, she did. Because of the impression or what? Upshot, dear. Up, not upside. It's only an upside for... Never mind. Yeah, okay. Upshot, upside. Yeah. So, apparently... well, you remember back when he was chewing up the OxyContins for the refreshing burst of flavor. He missed 6 weeks or so while he was out in Arizona petting horses. Oh, I'd forgotten about that. Brother Deacon Asa says, this coming from a guy, I don't like to talk about myself, this coming from a guy who, for those who can recall all the way back to the early aughts, did a whole one-hour interview with himself. Ah! Well, yeah. But we haven't even gotten to the really nasty part yet. He said he realized something was wrong on January 12th when he experienced shortness of breath. Oddly enough, I remember Bo Webb, Judy, and I traveling to Nashville for the Music Saves Mountains concert years and years ago now. We drove down together, and we were all excited. The Dave Matthews Band, a whole host of talent and stars gathered on the stage of the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville, Tennessee, in a benefit concert to help stop mountaintop removal. It was a benefit concert for the Natural Resources Defense Council. And naturally, the hillbillies were representing. But on the way down, Judy had a nasty cough, and she felt like she had some sort of a bug, and wanted to make sure it wasn't going to turn into pneumonia. And so she told us how she was going to be going to the doctor when she got home, and when she got home was when she got the diagnosis. Remember, Judy Bonds, to the likes of Rush Limbaugh, was an environmental wacko for daring to speak out about the people in her neighborhood and her holler and her community and her county and her state and her region who had been murdered in cold blood by the coal industry. Anyway, Flush continued and said, I thought about not telling anybody. It is what it is. You know me. I'm the mayor of Realville. Really? This is the mayor of Realville. You know, the guy who thinks that Trump is a great president, just for starters.
This has happened, and my intention is to come here every day I can and do this program as normally and competently and expertly as I do each and every day. In other words, not at all. Because that is the source of my greatest satisfaction, professionally, personally. I told the staff today that I... Ooh, get the hockey... No, don't get the hockey puck. You might choke. Get the bucket. Get a big bucket. We're just crossing the one-hour mark for this Moran Monday program, and I got to say that here in a few seconds, dinner is going to be done for both the Eastern and Central time zones. I told the staff today that I have a deeply personal relationship with God that I do not proselytize about, but I do, and I've been working that relationship tremendously. I am at the moment experiencing zero symptoms. He's been working the relationship with God? In just what sort of theological system does one work one's relationship with God? I mean, I don't know. Maybe he ascribes to the ancient Roman religion, like I said earlier on. It was kind of contractual in nature. We barbecue the ox, you don't send a plague. Ron and Raleigh noting, I had nothing to do with it. So Rush has the big C. All I can say to that is fuck him. I imagine that all those panatellas that he's huffed over the years might have had something to do with it. Let the hagiography begin. By God, if he can inhale a Cuban cigar, he's a tougher bird than I thought he was. Most people turn green and go to work on the bucket trying to do that. This man has no more of a relationship with the Almighty than I do. Probably less. I felt that I had to tell you because that's the kind of relationship that I feel like I have with those of you in this audience. Over the years, a lot of people have been very nice, telling me how much this program has meant to them. But whatever that is, it pales in comparison to what you've all meant to me. You know what the Ditto Monkeys have meant to Rush Limbaugh? $50 million a year worth. That's what they've meant. 99% of them he wouldn't speak to on the street. Even if they adore the ground that he walks on. And then, having talked about it ad infinitum, or damn near, he then said, I hope I'll be talking about this as little as necessary in the coming days, but we've got a great bunch of doctors, a great team assembled. We're at full speed ahead on this. It's just now a matter of implementing what we're going to be told later this week, and I hope to be back on Thursday. If not, I'll be back as soon as I can. Every day I'm not here, I'll be thinking of you and missing you. Yeah. No. But again, who knows where he'll treat. Some highfalutin joint in South Florida, or maybe he'll go to really one of the kick-ass cancer centers like Cedars-Sinai in New York, or the best cancer center in the United States, MD Anderson in Houston, which is fitting because Houston has and the Gulf Coast area has a huge cancer cluster, brought to you by American capitalism. Or maybe the, named after a former manager of the Cincinnati Reds, that huge cancer center in Seattle. But the point is, he can go anywhere he wants to. Johns Hopkins, Mayo Clinic, Cleveland Clinic. Cleveland Clinic's more about hearts, though. He doesn't have one of those. But when I tell you what I worry about. Rush will be cared for well. I just don't know who's going to take care of the wife he keeps in the pit there in the compound in Florida. Who's gonna lower the lotion in the basket to her every day and say, "My friends, it puts the lotion on its skin." We don't know. course, she may not be there anymore. I haven't even seen her face on a milk carton in so long that I can't remember the last time I did. But it would have been just another bullshit story were it not for the lecture that we've been getting from people over on the right-wing side of life about how we can't be mean to someone who has spent his life being shitty to other people. So, you know, no. Okay, I'll meet you halfway, Rick Wilson. I never wished cancer on him, and I won't hope that it kills him. How's that? I'd like him to make a full recovery. And then be taken before a firing squad. Oh, that was cold, wasn't it? Oh, well. No, I repent of that, too. I'd just like to see... I don't know. This could be one of those little discussions the community engages in. What would be a fitting treatment for Rush Limbaugh? Oh, I know. Having Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren win the presidency. Expanding the House majority. And taking back the Senate. Let him die not of cancer, but drowning in vats of great salty tears he sheds, having watched all that he struggled so mightily to foist upon the people of the United States go down in great balls of flame as everything he ever believed in and stood for falls in a heap. That, yes, that. And no perfect consciousness. Schick Shadel Hospital? Jim. I know what it was I was thinking of. The Fred Hutchinson Center. Freddie Hutchinson. Randy in PA says, I thought that in the religious communities that it was a given that prayer in the praise category is God fuel. It's something. It's something. And so, while Flush Flimball writes the checks for his cancer treatment, we will toddle along as best we can in this little program. Knock wood. And try to raise a paltry $200 so that we can meet the evening's fundraising goal and meet the meet Bruce's memorial challenge kindly put forward for the first program of every month by Laborman and Ralphs and an anonymous friend of the program. Can we do that in the next 2 hours? It would be wonderful if we could. Wonderful indeed. Just run over to headon.live, click on contribute, and away you'll go. Or you can just go to PayPal and use bobkincaid@gmail.com as the recipient address, and that will work equally well. But that reminds me, I don't know when, but this Congress is now half over. It was April of last year when we got the historic first ever hearing on the health impacts of mountaintop removal in Appalachian communities in the House Natural Resources Subcommittee. And we're still waiting on markup of the bill. Yeah, but I can anticipate that at some point in time, either this late winter or spring, we'll be back to D.C. to do more work on
on the AIC Act to try to stop the spread of the cancers that people like Rush Limbaugh so gleefully foisted upon Appalachia. Because, well, it's not just cancer, it's heart disease. It's premature death of all forms. It's birth defects. There's nothing wrong with this region that cannot be traced. And I don't mean just philosophically or ideologically, but statistically, epidemiologically, to the coal industry and now fracking. And they're speechifying on the floor of the Senate, Democrats appearing and speaking while Republicans sit somewhere and, I don't know, guzzle cheap gin and giggle for all I know, or, you know, what, bask in Rush Limbaugh's farts or something, whatever they do for fun. The senators are speaking, though. They're not framing it as such, but the reality is what they're doing is delivering a eulogy for the Constitution. Let's check in real quick with Martin Heinrich of New Mexico.
Preventing witnesses from testifying before Congress and the American people. The president's defense team had every opportunity to present us with evidence that would explain his actions or give us reason to doubt this clear pattern of fact. And instead, they shifted their defense away from the damning facts and embraced an extreme legal philosophy that would allow any president to abuse their power and ignore the law. This dangerous argument is not new. It was used by President Richard Nixon when he said, "Well, when the president does it, that means it's not illegal." President Nixon also strayed far from his duties to our nation for his own personal and political gain. It was only after courageous members of the United States Senate in his own political party put their country first and stood up to him that President Nixon finally resigned. We are now in yet another time when our chief executive has failed us, and our nation requires moral leadership and conscience from the United States Senate. Unfortunately, my Republican colleagues are unwilling to deliver that kind of moral leadership. President Donald Trump has proven to be unfit for the office he occupies. He abused his powers and continues to engage in a cover-up. He presents a clear and present danger to our national security and, more fundamentally, to our democracy itself. That is why my conscience and my duty to defend our Constitution compel me to vote to convict Donald Trump. I hope the rest of you will join in this vote, but I am not naive. I understand how President Trump operates. I know how ugly it can become if you dare to challenge him. But your fear of this bully cannot outweigh your duty to the American people. Your fear cannot blind you to how you will be viewed by history. What you should really fear is what will happen when there are no limits on any president, even when he is risking our national security and our foreign alliances to illegitimately maintain his grip on power. What we should all fear is what President Trump will do next if the Senate does not hold him accountable for the clear he is already committed.
I'm going to interrupt Senator Heinrich because I want to take a minute to go to the remarks of a man who spent every day of his life opposing
the heroic work of Judy Bonds. I'm speaking, of course, of, well, not every minute of his life, but every minute from the moment that Judy began to speak up about what was being done to our communities in the name of the coal industry and in the name of holy profit. Joe Manchin opposed her at every turn. He had that syrupy voice and it tries to come across as some sort of smoothie. But in the end, he was as toxic as any blasting dust. So Joe, trying to drive firmly down the middle of the road so as not to piss off the maggots here in West Virginia, and yet at the same time trying to soothe the actual Democrats in the Democratic Party here. Well, his magic word is balance. And he wanted to find a balance between voting to convict Donald Trump, which he should do, and not having the maggots decide to take a pot shot or three at him next time he shows up back here in West Virginia. For this you should probably get the hockey puck and the duct tape. He made these remarks on C-SPAN earlier today.
I request to make remarks today, if I may, until I conclude.
Without objection.
Madam President, I rise today to speak on the impeachment trial of President Donald John Trump. I know this was not a difficult decision for many of my friends and colleagues on both sides of the aisle, but it is one that has weighed heavily on me. Voting whether or not to remove a sitting president is no easy decision, and it shouldn't be, as the consequences for our nation are severe. As a moderate, centrist Democrat from West Virginia with one of the most bipartisan voting records.
Ha! Moderate. Yeah, that's some moderate, that Joe Manchin.
Records in the Senate. I have approached every vote I have cast in this body with an open mind and pride myself in working across the aisle to bring my Republican and Democrat friends together to do what is best for our country. Where I come from, party politics is more often overruled by just plain old common sense. And I have never...
That is bullshit. 200 proof. Party politics overruled by common sense. Yeah, I guess it was common sense that left a bunch of poison tanks, a couple of poison tanks unregulated so that they could breach and leak north of 10,000 gallons of a toxic chemical into the water supply of 9 counties in West Virginia. It's just plain old common sense to let millions and millions of pounds per day of high explosives be blasted into the air and into the bodies of men and women and children, of our seniors, of babies in the womb, all in the name of making a fast fucking buck off of a mountaintop removal operation. Hoo-wee! That is some common sense.
Over 35 years of public service, approached an issue with premeditated thoughts that my Republican friends are always wrong and my Democrat friends are always right. Since the people of West Virginia sent me here in 2010, I have for now...
Well, you know, there's an element of truth in that, because most of the time, Baloney Joe, as he's known in these parts, approaches a question with the assumption that his Republican friends are right, and his Democratic friends, and I'll say Democratic because I actually know the name of the goddamn party, unlike Joe, are wrong. That's why Joe spent so many years going to every goddamn spaghetti feast and bean dinner that West Virginians for Fetuses ever held. Yeah. Oh, by the way, it's always gratifying to know that the little history lessons we talk about here on the program retain some resonance.
And in this case, Lady B remembers the lessons of Charles the Bad. Remember a few weeks back when we were talking about Charles the Bad, Charles of Navarre? Yeah. Lady B with a note. Maybe we can help cure or ease his symptoms. Perhaps him being Flush Flimball, the oxymoron. Perhaps wrap him in the finest brandy-soaked bandages infused with soothing herbs. Maybe light scented candles and surround his bed with them. Then we can play heartwarming songs like Through the Fire, Light My Fire, and of course, We Didn't Start the Fire. Signed, Lady B. DJ Extraordinaire. Because I'm pretty sure Lady B didn't have to, you know, run over and check. Songs that have fire in them. Now, Lady B, just, you know, and, you know, I don't know, maybe we could after all of those, we could just turn on the greatest hits of Earth, Wind, and Fire. Ah! So, first cowbell of the evening goes to Lady B. The dulcet tones of Joe Manchin's voice brought this out from Tracy. Shit! That's about the size of it. Yep. Sometimes brevity is indeed the soul of wit. Here, back to Joe.
Never forgotten the oath I took to defend the Constitution and faithfully discharge the duties of the office of which I am honored to hold. It is by the Constitution that we sit here today as
a court
for the trial of impeachments. It is the Constitution that gives us what Hamilton called the awful discretion to remove the president from office. At the start of this trial, my colleagues and I took an oath, swearing to do impartial justice. I have taken this oath very seriously throughout this process, and I would like to think that my colleagues have done the same. Because as the House managers and our former colleague, Republican Senator John Warner from Virginia said, it is not just the president who is on trial here, but the Senate itself. The framers of the Constitution chose the Senate for this grave task because, according to Hamilton, they expected senators to be able to preserve, unawed and uninfluenced, the necessary impartiality to discharge this awesome responsibility fairly, without flinching. The framers knew this would not be easy, but that is why they gave the job to us, the senators. They believed the Senate was more likely to be impartial and independent, less influenced by political passion, less likely to betray our oaths, and more certain to vote on facts and evidence. This process should be based simply on our love and commitment to our country, not the relationship any of us might have with this president. I have always wanted this president and every president to succeed, no matter what their party affiliation. But I deeply love our country and must do what is best for the nation. The Constitution refers to the impeachment trials and says the Senate must try impeachments. The framers chose their words carefully. They knew what a trial was and what it meant to try a case. By using the term standards of judicial fact-finding, it calls on us to do what courts do every day and receive relevant evidence and examine witnesses. Sadly, the Senate has failed to meet its constitutional obligation set forth by the framers to hold a fair trial and do impartial justice. And we have done so in the worst way, by letting tribal politics rule the day. I supported President Trump's calls for a fair trial in the Senate, which he suggested himself would include witnesses. But instead, this body was shortchanged with a majority of my Republican colleagues, led by the majority leader, voting to move forward without relevant witnesses and evidence necessary for a fair trial as our framers intended. History will judge the Senate harshly for failing in its constitutional duty to try this case and do the impartial justice to defend the Constitution and to protect our democracy. Sadly, this is the legacy we leave to our children and grandchildren. Removing a president from the office to which the people have elected him is a grave step to take. But the framers gave the Senate this solemn responsibility to protect the Constitution and the people of this nation. Over the duration of this trial, I have listened carefully to both the House managers and the White House counsel make their case for and against the articles of impeachment. I commend both sides for their great and grueling work in defending their respective positions. The House managers have presented a strong case with an overwhelming display of evidence and shows what the president did was wrong. The president asked a foreign government to intervene in our upcoming election and to harm a domestic political rival. He delayed much-needed security aid for Ukraine to pressure newly elected President Zelensky to do him a favor. And he defied lawful subpoenas from the House of Representatives. However, the president's counsel, too, defended their actions by laying out their case of the president's actions. They pointed to the unclassified transcript of President Trump's July 25th call with newly elected Ukrainian President Zelensky to make the argument that Trump discussed burden sharing with other European countries and a mutual interest in rooting out corruption. They presented their views that the president was not given due process in the House of Representatives and highlighted the expedited nature of the House's proceedings. Finally, they argued, if a president does something which he believes will help him get elected and reelected to the public interest, that cannot be the kind of quid pro quo that results in impeachment. Over the long days and nights of this trial, I have listened to both sides present their case and answer our questions. I remain undecided on how I will vote, but these points I believe to be true. First, it was not a perfect call. A newly elected President Zelensky with no experience in international politics gets a call from the leader of the free world asking for a favor related to U.S. domestic political affairs? No one, regardless of political party, should think that the president did and what he did was right. It was just simply wrong. Pressuring a NATO ally who is actively fighting off Russian aggression in its country is wrong. President Zelensky or anyone else should never feel beholden to the superpower of the world for a favor before it can receive military aid. It's not who we are as a country. We stand shoulder to shoulder with our allies and never, ever condition our support of democracy for a political favor. Of all the arguments we have heard from the House managers and White House counsel during the long days and nights that we have sat here, the most dangerous, the most troubling to me is the false claim that the president can do no wrong, that he is above the law, and if it's good for the reelection of the president, that it's good for our country. That is simply preposterous. That is not who we are as Americans. That is not how I was raised in the small coal mining town of Farmington, West Virginia. Where I was raised, no one believed they were better than anyone else and could act with total disregard for the well-being of their neighbor if it was for their best interest.
Horseshit, Joe? The mine bosses knew they were better. That's why they stayed above the ground and people like your ancestors went beneath it. And when they were crushed in Slate Falls or a cracked timber or when they died of black lung, that's why the coal bosses above the ground, Joe, moved heaven and earth to keep from paying what they were legally obligated to pay for having maimed or killed somebody. Maybe Joe wasn't paying attention. You know, he was a kid when the Farmington mine disaster took place. Or a young adult. And they dragged a lot of bodies out of that hole, and I reckon there are some they didn't get to. You know who they didn't drag out of that hole? Because they weren't in it to begin with? The people who were above the law. The people who faced no fucking punishment for it. So, you may be selling, Joe, but I ain't buying.
That is not why over 230 years ago, the founding generation rebelled against a king and refused to crown a new one in this republic. So let me be clear. No one, Not even the president is above the law. Finally, the purpose of impeachment is not to punish the president, but to protect the public. The ultimate question is not whether the president's conduct warrants his removal from office, but whether our nation is better served by his removal by the Senate now, with impeachment, or by the decision the voters will make in November.
If they're allowed to make one. We already know the election is being interfered with. We already know that people like huggable, snuggleable, cuddleable wouldn't hurt a fly if anybody was looking at the fly. Pooty is already hard at work. This is a fact. And it's also a fact that Mitch McConnell, because the only voice in the Senate that counts is his, Mitch McConnell has stood in the way of doing anything substantive about that interference. But do blather on, Joe.
As Hamilton warned us, impeachments seldom fail to agitate the passions of the whole community. They divide us on party lines and inflame our animosities. Never before in the history of our republic, all of President Donald John Trump.
Wait a minute. Oops.
President is the most consequential decision that I or any U.S. senator will ever face. But regardless of my decision, and in the absence of 67 votes, I am reminded again of the words of Senator Byrd. The House.
Again, there will be no lightning bolt here. Jimmy in the Great Northwest says, undecided Joe. Yeah. He don't say much. He just talks a lot. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, not who we are. I hate that phrase more than anything. That is exactly who we are. And we're going to be exactly who the Senate says we are after the Senate is done saying it, even though the Senate majority represents 18% of the population, and the Senate minority that will vote for impeachment represents, 82% of the population or something like that. God almighty.
And Senate, Republicans and Democrats and the president must come together to heal the open wounds, bind up the damaged trust, and by our...
Oh, please! Donald Trump is going to come together to heal the wound, bind up the open healing... Shit. Sorry, Tracy. You already said that.
Our example, again, unite our people. For the common good, we must now put aside the bitterness that has infected our nation. We must begin by putting behind us the distrust and bitterness caused by this sorry episode and search for common ground instead of shoring up the...
Oh, by the way, Sparky reminds us, Ukraine is not a member of NATO. Joe's a moron.
The visions that have eroded decency and goodwill and dimmed our collective vision. It is not the legacy of the individual senators that we should be concerned about, but it is the legacy of this great institution, the United States Senate, that we leave for generations to come. I want to thank you, and I want to ask the good Lord to continue to bless this great country of ours during this trying time.
Yeah, you know what? Our country's not so blessed by the good Lord as long as Donald John Trump remains in the White House. That's not a blessing, Joe. That's a curse. And unless you vote to convict, you are participating in the ongoing curse of this nation. Jesus. I hate mealy mouth soft soapers. You know, it's interesting. Clarity just asked a question that I was thinking about myself. Who writes for Dino Joe? David Frum? Because you know, Joe has never sat poring and pondering over a copy of the Federalist Papers. Not Federalist 65 for sure. But there's the upshot. Joe thinks it would be appropriate, if not to remove him from office, then at least censure him. Because that'll have a lot of effect. That'll have all the effect of, I don't know, throwing a tennis ball at an Abrams tank. It's just embarrassing. Meanwhile, the Senate is a mostly empty chamber right now, staying in session in case anybody wants to come down and pontificate for a minute. You know, just put something on the record about why he should be convicted or why we should declare that the president is above the law, which seems to be the going theory for those 53, maybe 52 mugwumps. You know how Ron and Raleigh said a couple of minutes ago that... Ron just said, skip a bit, brother. I want to eat at some point. It might be a while. But you know how Ron said, not who we are, that he just despises that phrase? Yeah. I've got a single word that has come to give me, it gives me the fantods. And that word is inappropriate. Inappropriate. I remember a long, long time ago having a little bit of, it was restrained because we were in a different setting, but having as close to a hissy as I could have at that time over the use of the word inappropriate in a sexual abuse case, in a child sexual abuse setting. And I said, no, the touching that was engaged in was not inappropriate. It was criminal. Was felonious. Inappropriate is wearing white after Labor Day. Inappropriate is ordering red wine with the red wine because you're ordering red snapper. That's inappropriate. Inappropriate of course this was before that ever happened, but for inappropriate is being in a debate and having a booger come creeping out of your nostril and then larping it up like Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, did. That's inappropriate. What Donald John Trump did is impeachable. It was proven to be impeachable by the fact that the House impeached him. These Republican jackanapeses are not going to be voting on whether or not it was impeachable, no matter what they say to the press or what they say in the well of the Senate. He is impeached. Impeachability and convictability are two entirely and separate matters. God. And yet, once again, that's one of those things that's not getting a hell of a lot of airplay. Every time a Republican says, I don't think it's impeachable, you know, someone should hit them in the face with a pie. You know, a really tasty pie, a coconut cream or banana cream or maybe a peanut butter pie. But they should get a pie in the face. Because the Senate has not a goddamn word to say about whether something is impeachable. Only the House does. If they would bother reading the Constitution, they would figure that out. But they're not interested in figuring that out. They're interested in finding a way out, both for themselves and for a lawless president. Lamar Alexander, well, Lamar Alexander was who Lamar Alexander is. I wonder, though, about Cory Gardner in Colorado. There's nothing remotely, even faintly pink about Colorado. Colorado is a blue state.
you know, with a little enclave of red weirdness in places like, sorry, Lady B and Kevin, Colorado Springs. You know, where you've got James Dobson, I guess, still clinging to life and his focus on the family and the various and sundry other religion industry outfits. You know, James Dobson, who advised his followers to beat children until they cry real tears. James Dobson, who said that the best way to keep a little boy from catching the gay was for a father to take him into the shower naked with him when the little fella's, you know, old, big enough to stand up and showing him what a man's dick looks like. That James Dobson. Or, you know, formerly, maybe still, the home of Ted Haggard, who was leading a huge evangelical congregation until he got caught snorting meth off a gay hooker's butt. These things happen. That red enclave. But Cory Gardner cannot hope to save his seat by voting in favor of Donald Trump. I mean, Kevin, Lady B, check your local sources if you don't mind being the ad hoc Horn Research Committee for this evening. What are his numbers looking like, his reelects? Is he just going to swan right back into the Senate on the back of his proud vote to let the president do as he sees fit and be above the law? I don't know. Let me know if you do. C-SPAN is telling us, and the Eastern Plains, too, Bob, says Rusty. Yeah, true that. That's, that sparse, sparsely populated, barren, largely, area east of the mountains, yeah. Yeah. True. But C-SPAN tells us that upcoming will be Lisa Murkowski explaining herself. That might be worth sticking around for. I can't be sure when that's going to happen, so if you see it happen, please send me an email if it's happening during the program. And, of course, let's see, we're in the Eastern time zone, so I guess out in Iowegia, it's 5:42, and because the multimillionaires of the for-profit media can't help themselves, they've been in an absolute Iowa caucus frenzy all day today, all weekend, really. The multimillionaires had about a shit hemorrhage when CNN pulled its final Des Moines Register poll, which was the gold standard poll of Iowegia, because it turned out that in at least one occasion, their questioner was leaving out one candidate from one of the questions about if you can't get who you want, who would you be in favor of next? And they presumably accidentally left out the name of the plucky little mayor of South Bend, Indiana, from their list, and this in turn occasioned a shit hemorrhage of pearl clutching and hand wringing, and led to the poll being pulled. But I wanted to make sure that I got in I got in one little fact about the Iowa caucuses before everybody moves into full conniption mode. And that's this. We are conditioned over the course of our now 4-year-long presidential campaign cycle, our never-ending presidential campaign cycle, we are conditioned to think that Iowa really means something. Oh, God, I think Lisa Murkowski's getting ready to speak. She just wandered down to the well, and oh, here we go. Jesus. Or maybe she's doing the mic check. Check, mic check, check, 1, 2.
Is she? Is she gonna? No? Yes? Don't know? Well, the stenographers walk. The stenographers are wandering around, so looks like we may be hearing something from her. Audio. Turn her mic on, damn it. Oh, that's on me. Sorry.
The sole power to try all impeachments, and exercising that power, we all know, is a weighty, weighty responsibility. This was only the third time in the history of our country that the Senate convened to handle a presidential impeachment, and only the second in the past 150 years. I was part of a small group that worked to secure a fair, an honest, and a transparent structure for the trial.
Bullshit.
And we
no
based
witnesses.
It on how this chamber handled the trial of President Clinton.
No, you didn't. They had witnesses.
Some 20 years ago. So there were 24 hours of arguments for each side, 16 hours of questions from members, with the full House record admitted as evidence.
Yeah, we know this lady.
That should have been more than enough to answer the questions.
No,
do we need to hear more?
Yeah, you do.
Should there be additional process?
John Bolton?
But, Mr. President,
Pat
Cipollone, the structure we built
Jay Sekulow,
should have been
they're all
sufficient.
Witnesses.
But the foundation upon which it rested was rotted. The House rushed
really?
Through
rotted.
What should have been one of the most serious, consequential undertakings of the legislative branch, simply to meet an artificial, self-imposed deadline.
Not true.
Prior presidential impeachments resulted from years of investigation, where subpoenas were issued and they were litigated.
Now hold the damn phone. She said that it came after years and subpoenas. Well, that's because presidents before complied with the damn subpoenas. Because beginning with Nixon and up into Clinton, there was an understanding that the law was the law. But this is a lawless president who said, fuck the subpoenas. Stupid, stupid person.
Partisanship that has been on display here.
Oh, partisanship.
We cannot be the greatest deliberative body when we kick things off by issuing letters to the media instead of coming together to set the parameters of the trial and negotiate in...
That would be Trump.
...proceed.
The
and
letter.
For all the talk of impartiality, it is clear to me that few in this chamber approach this with a genuinely open mind. Some have been calling for the president to be impeached for years. Indeed, we saw just today clips that indicate headlines 19 minutes after the president was sworn into office calling for his impeachment.
That's because he became impeachable.
Others in this chamber saw little need to even consider the arguments from the House before stating their intentions to acquit.
That would be your majority leader.
Over the course of the past few weeks, we've all seen the videos from 20 years ago where members who were present during the Clinton trial took the exact opposite stance.
You mean
than
like
they
Lindsay?
Take today.
Lindsay?
That level of hypocrisy is astounding, even for a place like Washington, D.C. The president's behavior was shameful and wrong. His personal interests do not take precedence over those of this great nation. The president has the responsibility to uphold the integrity and the honor of the office, not just for himself, but for all future presidents. Degrading the office by actions or even name-calling weakens it for future presidents.
Wah.
And it weakens.
Yeah, I know. Lost the feed for a second there. Don't think it was much of a loss, really, but making a historical record here.
That I reached several days ago that there would be no fair trial.
Yeah,
while
you decided there wouldn't be a fair trial.
Here in this Senate.
Goddess of Irony's playing hell with
it. Was
her
really
tonight.
Litigated
Lindsey
in the court
Graham,
of public
no
opinion.
Fair trial.
For half the country, they'd already decided there had been far too much process. They considered the entire impeachment inquiry to be baseless.
That's bullshit.
And they thought that the Senate should have just dismissed.
North of 70, maybe 80% of the American people wanted witnesses. And she says half the country. I think this woman has more trouble with ciphering than I do.
Posed. No matter how many documents were produced, the only way the trial could have been considered fair was it. If it resulted in the president's removal from office. During the month
if that's what the evidence
that the House
supports,
declined
honey.
To transmit the articles to the Senate, the demon of faction extended his scepter. The outcome became clear. And a careless media cheerfully tried to put out the fires with gasoline. We debated witnesses instead of the case before the Senate. Rather than the president's conduct, the focus turned to how a lack of additional witnesses could be used to undermine any final conclusion. And what started with political initiatives that degraded the office of the president and left the Congress wallowing in partisan mud, it threatened to drag the last remaining branch of government down along with us. Now, Mr. President, I've taken tough votes before to uphold the integrity of our courts. And when it became clear that a tie vote here in the Senate would simply be used to burn down our third branch of government for partisan political purposes, I said, enough. Just enough.
No, you didn't. You said, let me get my nose up Mitch
McConnell. The response to the president's behavior is not to disenfranchise nearly 63 million Americans and remove him from
the
ballot.
Yeah, because 66 million Americans have already been disenfranchised.
Could have pursued censure and not immediately jumped to the remedy of last resort.
Censure isn't in the Constitution. Impeachment is,
I cannot
dummy.
Vote to convict. The Constitution provides for impeachment, but does not demand it in all instances. An incremental first step to remind the president that, as Montesquieu said, political virtue is a renunciation of oneself.
Montesquieu was not among the framers of the Constitution. Neither is censure.
Removal from office and being barred from ever holding another office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States is the political death penalty. The president's name is on ballots that have already been cast. The voters will pronounce a verdict in 9 months.
If they're allowed
to. And we must trust their judgment.
But can you trust the process?
This process has been the apotheosis of the problem of congressional abdication. Through the refusal to exercise war powers or relinquishing the power of the purse, selective oversight, and an unwillingness to...
Darlene in Connecticut just wrote in, Senate equals the greatest deliberative body. Bullshit! I'm sick of hearing that lie, and I'm super pissed at my Connecticut senators. Quote, I felt deep disillusionment and dismay as I sat there on the floor, as Rich said Richard Blumenthal told Vice News at the Capitol Friday night. I just felt a deep sense of loss, not just loss on this vote or these issues, but overall the integrity and value of the body. Is he kidding? What? He didn't see this coming? Give me a goddamn break. They're all clueless, even the Dems in the House of Lords Senate. This is gross and disgusting. Murkowski and Collins and Lamar et al. Are all lying cowards. May Herstory and the goddess of irony one day treat them as the refuse they are. And all God's children said amen.
Last few weeks, I had many private conversations with colleagues, and so many in this chamber share my sadness for the present state of our institutions. It's my hope that we finally found bottom here, that both sides can look inward and reflect on the apparent willingness that each has to destroy not just each other, but all of the institutions of our government.
Lady, the destruction of the institutions of our government is what is going to transpire because of your fucking vote. This is the kneecapping of the Constitution. But then again, so many aspects of that government, you being a godless, a godforsaken Republican, you'd be happy to see gone.
Mr. President, thank you. I yield the floor.
Fuck off. Okay. Well, that's Lisa Murkowski. We knew that it would be some seriously unmitigated horse shit, but it's still distressing to see it. It's sad, but nonetheless not shocking. Now back to the Iowa caucuses for a minute. I suspended my remarks on the Iowa caucuses when Lisa Murkowski began lying. Oh, by the way, let me note that we're 2 hours into the program. We start every program here with a $200 challenge. If we can raise $200, it gets matched by Laborman and Ralphs and an anonymous contributor. We are at zero through 2 hours of this program. So we'll try to raise $200 in an hour. Can we do it? I don't know. But we need to. We need to. Randy and PA, can you get these shit weasels off my radio, please? Well, I mean, I think up next is Senator Cortez Masto from Nevada, a Democrat. Might be interesting to hear what she's got to say. At least it won't be that the same odious horse shit that comes out of the mouths of Lamar Alexander and Lisa Murkowski. But anyway, we need to raise $200, and we got an hour and a minute to do it in. Please don't throw away this $200 challenge. I mean, when you compare the content of this program, for instance, with the sewage and parade of lies and prevarications that Rush Limbaugh has perpetrated over these years, and that fucker pulling down $50 million a year, I don't want $50 million a year. I just want to keep this program on the air. And the way we do it is when we've got a challenge like this, we meet it. So that's where we stand. Now, Iowa. The Iowa carcasses. We pay attention to the Iowa carcasses because we are trained to pay attention to the Iowa carcasses. Ooh, Bruga Bruga, who's going to win in Iowa? Bruga Bruga. When in point of fact, the caucus system, as interesting as I find it from a political anthropology standpoint, is about as undemocratic a thing as you're likely to find. And B, it's not even what it's cracked up to be. Understand, please, that this summer, well, it won't even, maybe it's not even summer yet. You know, the solstice hits in
third week of June. But in June, the Iowa Democratic Party will hold its state convention. At that state convention, some 3,975 delegates are in play. It's a lot of delegates for a little state like Iowa. But they break them out on a state level. It's different from, you know, the national level. And party-wise is different from the Electoral College, etc. But regardless, in June, when the Iowa Democratic Party holds its convention, they will be determining how to allocate some 3,975 delegates among the candidates who are still on the ballot and running for the Democratic presidential nomination. So, unless someone told you, you might be inclined to think that, well, that must mean that at the caucus this evening, there's 3,975 delegates up for grabs. The reason they don't tell you this is because that's not true. What they prefer to do, however, is to say nothing and leave people to their own imaginations, because the three commandments of W.C. Fields are far more applicable in political situations in the United States than are the Ten Commandments of Moses. Fields' three commandments are, and longtime listeners to this program will have it memorized. One, you can't cheat an honest man. Two, never give a sucker an even break. And three, don't smarten up a chump. Well, the multimillionaire for-profit media are not going to smarten us chumps up if they can possibly avoid it. So because they've got time to fill, especially now in the age of the 24-hour-a-day news cycle, they make a big deal out of Iowa. And all the candidates go and spend so much time in Iowa because the media come to Iowa to cover the candidates in Iowa. Do you see how the logic becomes circular? And we hear Iowa, Iowa, Iowa. And this is without taking into account the fact that Iowa is probably not the best test or even exemplar of the viability of candidates within the modern Democratic Party at all, a little bit even. It's just another way for the media to sell soap, or in our modern era, pharmaceuticals. Which leads me to the Paul Harvey part of this little this little set piece. You know, the rest of the story. Well, at least there's still... That would be totally lost on any audience under 50. My bad. Look him up. The late, great Bart Kopp referred to him as the old horse molester, because of the shitty way that he went on and on during the Clinton era. Paul Harvey did. Yeah, anyway. So, yeah, here's the thing. Those 3,975 delegates, well, there's some ciphering involved here, so let's see, 3,975, 3,934 of them are not in play tonight. You heard that right. No, Joke Toad won't tell you that. None of them in the multimillionaire for-profit media will tell you that. There are, in the Iowa caucuses this evening, at stake precisely 41 delegates out of 3,975. That's what all this is about. That's what all the hoopla and carrying on is about. 41 delegates. Feel a little bit like you just paid your quarter at the sign that said this way to the egress in the circus? That's okay. You are now among a significant minority of American citizens who know that the Iowa caucuses are a giant goddamn nothing burger. The Iowa caucuses are a fart in a whirlwind. They are a means by which the multimillionaires of the for-profit media manipulate your attention in order to deliver you unto the tender mercies of the advertisers who keep them on the air. Yeah. Kind of pisses you off a little bit, doesn't it? All this carrying on for 41 delegates. All these declarations of who's viable and who's not and who has momentum and who doesn't. 41 delegates. Maybe that explains why there's such shitty turnout for the caucuses in Iowa. Maybe the Iowegians know that it's a load of bullshit. But then again, consider what an economic force multiplier having all of those political operatives spending their money in Iowa every 4 years does for crappy little towns in the middle of nowhere. Sorry, I'm not trying to insult Iowa. But I'd say the same thing if we were talking about reporters crawling over all over Fraser's Bottom, West Virginia, too. It's a game. It's a joke that's being played out at your expense. But if you are one of those crappy little towns in Iowa, every 4 years the fucking check clears. If you're the Des Moines Register, every 4 years, the check clears. And if you're a newspaper in Iowa, by God, you need all the checks clearing you can get. If you're some shitty little AM talk radio station in Iowa, you need the ads. Christ, you need the ads because you can't make it up with ads from Freddy's Texaco. Free car wash with Philip every other Friday. You just can't do it. We desperately need to understand that these political campaigns are not pure political exercises. They are, by the sweet blood of Jesus, exercises in the most cynical form of capitalism. 41 fucking delegates. Now, I say this without regard to any candidate because I don't have a candidate. Been listening a while, you'll know. I'm not taking any position because I don't get a goddamn vote. My primary isn't until May, at which point The only thing us little hillbilly Democrats can do is put uh, is 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 put the I don't know, the spoon in the sundae. We don't even get to put the cherry on top. Well, I guess that's true, Brother Deacon Asa. Lib talker diminishes the importance of America's heartland in choosing the direction of our great country. Or how about Lib talker explains that egress means exit and don't pay the money. God, what a sham. What a scam. What a grift. What a hustle. So, you know, whoever, here's the narrative for tomorrow morning. Candidate has real momentum coming out of Iowa. Candidate remains viable with strong second place finish. Candidate places fourth, but hopes for strong showing in later primary states. Jesus Christ. Lee in New York writes, subject line, Iowa. From electoralvote.com, Iowa sometimes picks winners, but not always. In the past seven contested Democratic primaries, the Iowa winner got the nomination five times, but only one of the winners, Barack Obama, in 2008, won the presidency. What Iowa is better at picking is losers. Anyone not coming in the top three or four in Iowa is generally dead meat. Expect a number of candidates to drop out on Tuesday or Wednesday. Subject line participation, Ron in Raleigh says, blacks and Latinos make up about 9% of the caucus participants. Seems fair. Just the folks I want choosing a candidate for me. Yeah, because see, that's the one thing, that's the one headline you'll never see. State with very few electoral college votes declares candidate its winner. State with horrible participation and next to no diversity declares candidate its winner. Yuck. 41 votes. 41 goddamn delegates. I mean, it feels silly for ever having paid attention to a single story about Iowa. Oh, sure, there's lovely places. Elkhart, Keokuk, Marshalltown, Waterloo, Sioux City, Iowa City, Des Moines. I wonder sometimes if maybe Mark Burnett got the idea for the first reality shows by watching American presidential politics. Because that's all it is. It's reality TV. It is manufactured reality. Now, if the first primary in the nation was an actual vote with all the delegates on the line, different story, especially if it's where the Democratic Party is concerned, if it's happening in a diverse state. You want to watch the political media shit itself? Make California the first primary. Ooh, yeah. And of course, my common sense idea, a one-day national primary, fills the multimillionaires of the for-profit media with just howling. Blood pouring from their sweat glands, dread. Because that would be good for America, but terrible
terrible for the for-profit media. Now, consider who the beneficiaries are of campaign seasons. TV stations, newspapers, radio stations. In the more modern era, Facebook, Twitter, and yes, of all the outfits, the one I like the most, the United States Postal Service. It is sad to ponder, but our political campaigns, with the rise of direct mail marketing, have a tremendous positive impact on the bottom line of the Postal Service. It's great for them. But it is terrible for any notion of democracy. Over on Twitter, D'Angelo remarking, the Iowa caucuses have as much relevance to the nomination as Groundhog Day has to meteorology. Same difference. Yeah, but at least the groundhog's fucking marginally cute, I guess. But then again, so too are the man-on-the-street interviews that you get in Donut Center, Iowa. We've crisscrossed the state today for major news organization, and we just wanted to share with you this salt of the earth, son of the common clay, voter's opinion.
Well, you know, I just support Donald Trump. He's making America great again. That's what he's doing. Make America great.
Yeah, my aching back. Albert with a note. Bob, has anyone ever lost the Iowa caucus and won the presidency? I presume that, well, I don't. Who won on the Republican side in 2008? Did McCain win? Or was that the year that Pat Buchanan or Rick Sanctum Santorum or, you know, old Frothy Mix himself? Yeah, No, the research department will have to take that up. And by the way, Ralphs, who's eagerly awaiting coming through on the on Bruce's memorial challenge, says, "Come on, people! Tegan's hoping somebody will contribute," with a lovely photo of Tegan the cat, looking, well, a little bit menacing. I don't think you want Tegan on your bad side. And thank you, Charlene, in Rogues Island, for getting us off the schneid in that regard. We are down to 180 to go. Thank you, Charlene, so much. Thank you so very much indeed. Hopefully you'll get some company in fairly short order. Mark in Florida. Here we go. An answer to the question, Mark serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department on this one. Losing Iowa doesn't always spell disaster. Just ask Bill Clinton or Donald Trump. Tom Harkin won in 1992, a favorite son of Iowa. He came in fourth. Bill Clinton did. And then he became the comeback kid in New Hampshire, finishing second. And then, of course, only 4 years ago, yeah, there it is, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, saw all the boogers he could eat and all the anointing he could stand, just glittering, shining before his eyes, just out of his reach. Trump lost Iowa. Although I'm sure if you asked either him or Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, now they'd say, no, no, it was rigged. He won. Jesus. What's that? Darlene in Connecticut says, missed almost the first 2 hours of your show to another town meeting I had to be at, Iowa. Did you talk about the Klobuchar debacle? No, I haven't. We'll get there. Delving into a couple of articles about her this weekend, it's clear she never really takes on hot-button issues and plays it safe with making change or taking credit for what could be viewed on the surface as non-controversial kitchen-table issues. I don't trust her, and we don't need someone who'll say as soon as she gets into office that we aren't going to look back, only forward. Oh, she and Biden are definitely of that caliber. But her calculations to hustle this case as an example of her being tough on crime or whatever may have backfired with the Burrell matter. Hey, it was one black teen, a boy, shooting dead another black teen, a girl after all, so no one could accuse Klobuchar of racism, right? But the kid, who's now 33 and has served more time in jail than out, has consistently maintained he was innocent, and just a cursory look at the evidence shows there were major missteps in the case and a lack of hard evidence. Again, I don't trust her. We don't need moderatism. We don't need it now. We must have hard pushback, as you've said, damnatio memoriae, when it comes to Trump, but only after his fat ass is put in the slammer for crimes against humanity. Can you tell I'm pissed about the vote to deny witnesses in the Senate in the impeachment trial? That said, if Klobuchar is the nominee, I will. You know the drill. Count me in for $100 toward the challenge, my friend. Oh, my goodness. Thank you, Darlene. That means we've only got $80 to go. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you so much. So, are there 8 people with $10? 4 people with 20 that can finish this challenge off? It would be wonderful. Well, actually, that just changed. Thank you, Samson. That's tremendous. So that's one person at $5, and the challenge is met. Thank you so much, Samson. I cannot thank you enough. One person, $5, and we are done with Bruce's Memorial Challenge, and we're done before, we're done with more than 30 minutes left in the program if that $5 rolls in the next 8 minutes. That's tremendous. Thank you. Billable Rick, Iowa caucuses. I second your motion that the Iowa caucuses are about as relevant to the nomination of a president as a groundhog is to forecasting the weather. Apologies to Joe and Cleveland's fondness for that critter. Yeah, I saw. Giraffrey went and visited Punxsutawney Phil this weekend. It means very little to win the Iowa caucus. Just ask Presidents Pat Robertson, Pat Buchanan, and Booger Eater Cruz about how much winning Iowa meant to their campaigns. Yeah, but it's a great hustle. And the check's all clear. But the thing is, do we have to be willing participants in that graft? And I say no. Of course, you know me. I want a one-day national primary. Because it's not 1830 and we don't have to take the ballots to the county seat from out in the hinterlands, buy a mule-drawn wagon, and hitch old Dobbin up to the shay. Funny that. Now, as to Amy Klobuchar. Klobuchar asked to suspend campaign after probe suggests she may have put innocent teen in jail. That's the case that Darlene was referring to, but apparently somebody has decided to drill down on Amy Klobuchar because the other story out there today has to do with her prosecution when she was the prosecuting attorney of Hennepin County, Minnesota. Her prosecution of members of the Somali community there for consumption of a substance called khat. K-H-A-T. Khat. It's a stimulant. It's on the same drug schedule as heroin and LSD, but its stimulant properties are more properly considered
along the lines of a really, really strong cup of coffee, or the three or four Red Bulls that, you know, white kids in a bar in Minneapolis will consume on a Saturday night. In fact, the Red Bull is probably far more dangerous than the cot. Nonetheless, Amy Klobuchar prosecuted the hell out of Somalis for possession of cot. As to the other story, the Associated Press had it Tuesday, this past. She's been braying about her prosecution of Myron Burrell. He got life in prison after being convicted of firing a stray bullet. A stray bullet. You know, kind of like the woman who died, what state was it in, New Year's Eve, when the bullet went up and then came down and went, you know, killed grandma? Stray bullet. That hit and killed 11-year-old Taisha Edwards. She was sitting at her dining room table doing homework in 2002. This was, of course, also when Klobuchar was head of the Hennepin County. She was the district attorney for Hennepin County. When she went to trial against Myron Burrell, who has maintained his innocence all along, she didn't have a gun. She didn't have any fingerprints. She had no DNA evidence. She had nothing but circumstantial evidence. She was so angry at him over the crime, she wouldn't even let him go to the funeral. Upon his conviction in 2003, Amy Klobuchar said, "This is what needs to happen when there is this kind of gun gang violence." There's only one, well, there's a lot of problems. Among other things, the dime got dropped on 16-year-old Myron Burrell by an enemy of his, a foe. Evidence was left out. Interview statements were shoddy at best. And on tape, the chief homicide detective got stone cold busted offering money to someone for giving him secondhand information. That would be Sergeant Richard Zimmerman, who told a man he interrogated, "Hearsay is still worth something to me. Sometimes you get hearsay here, hearsay there. Sometimes it's like a jigsaw puzzle. Things come together, you know what I mean?" The man dropped the name of Myron Burrell, 16 years old, and got $600 for it. I've talked from time to time about the shitty business of prosecution, because I did it for a while. I never offered anybody $600, or to the best of my knowledge, none of the cops did either. But I spent 5 years watching the full force of the criminal law of the state of West Virginia be used to imprison mostly poor, stupid people. And that's not me being an elitist. That is who the criminal law comes down on. For the most part, poor, stupid people. Poor people who do desperate things and out of stupidity don't understand that there will be hateful consequences for it. So here, with the AP's story, well, they worked with American Public Media. They worked with Minneapolis NAACP, Black Lives Matter Twin Cities, Communities United Against Police Brutality. And those groups are calling for Amy Klobuchar to call it quits. Leslie Redmond is president of the Minneapolis NAACP. And she said, "This is about justice. This is about what's right and wrong. and then went on to compare what happened to Myron Burrell with what Donald Trump did to the Central Park Five. Continuing, Leslie Redmond added, I need Minnesotans to wake up and to recognize we're not as progressive as we claim to be. When we think about when they see us, that wasn't just a situation that happened to the Central Park Five in New York alone. This is a situation that happens all around America. She noted that politicians have used the criminal justice system to enhance their political careers. And then, just based upon my own personal knowledge and information provided to me by my friends up in that direction, there's her, there's Amy Klobuchar's altogether too cozy relationship with the mining industry. We don't hear much about it. It's practically Canada. But there is a desperate fight on in northern Minnesota and northern Wisconsin and northern Michigan to save some of the most pristine waters that yet exist in the United States. And up toward, up in the Minnesota area, there's a compact between the United States and Canada that refers to something called the Boundary Waters. And all through that area, the magic of the food that grows on water, as it is referred to by the Anishinaabe people up there, it was all a very fertile region for what is called wild rice. But thanks to the iron mining industry, there are vast reaches of freshwater streams in northern Minnesota. St. Louis River comes to mind, that won't support life anymore. That damn sure won't support the natural year in and year out cultivation of the wild rice beds. It was this knowledge that moved my friends in northern Wisconsin to such profound and determined activism to protect their waters when an iron mining outfit headed by a now dead mining executive from West Virginia to try to destroy their world. So, Amy Klobuchar has given me the creeps for a long time. And this only makes matters worse. But with any luck at all, you know, she thought, and part of her campaign was predicated on the fact that she was going to have a big showing in Iowa, and that was going to propel her further into the political limelight. If she does come in fifth or sixth, she may wind up suspending her campaign. Even if it's not for the reasons called for. So isn't that interesting? But at least we all now know that the Iowa caucuses, the Iowa carcasses, more aptly, are nothing more than a hustle on the carnival midway. Now, if you're a big Bernie supporter and Bernie wins, don't think that I'm sitting here saying that, you know, okay, well, no, it doesn't matter. I'm not saying that at all. But it isn't what we have been told it is. Long, long ago, when US 60 was the main artery through this region, And in this area, a twisting climb up a mountain with what we consider now in the age of tourism to be beautiful views, but once upon a time were terrifying drop-offs, and where from time to time the road still collapses into the gorge below because, well, there's something about a mountain that doesn't like asphalt paving, I guess. But I'm old enough that I can remember before I-64 was completed and before US 19 was four-laned and before the New River Gorge Bridge was built. 60 was it. And there was a steady stream of traffic on that little two-lane road. And there was tourism back then, too, and Gauley Mountain was festooned with little tourist traps and junk shops. There's still one yet remaining. It's called the Mystery Hole. It's an old Quonset hut with a tie-dye painted old wrecked VW Beetle looking like it's just driven into the side of the building. And the Mystery Hole is truly mysterious. Maybe if we can pull the horn in together, some of you might even want to go and visit it when you're here, if it's open. It's mysterious. But there were all kinds of little junk shops up and down the road. There's one house that still has, I think, a concrete gorilla that used to sit atop one of the buildings. And another of the buildings still exists, but it's been sort of absorbed or assimilated, if you will. Vague obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. It's been assimilated into a company that puts up porta potties where they're needed. But there used to be a sign that would bring in the tourists, and that sign said, "See the baby rattler." And, of course, it was hand-painted, and there was a picture of a rattlesnake. You'd pay your dime or your whatever it was, and you'd go in to see the baby rattlers, and they were right there. There was a glass case. And in that case were several baby rattlers. You know, like you give a little baby to hold in its hand and shake, and it makes a rattling noise. It was a con. It was a good-natured hustle. It was a grift. Well, so too was the gas station run by a fellow named Arch Bell, who had a live bear in a cage. And you could pay a nickel and watch the bear drink a bottle of soda pop. You had to pay the nickel for the bottle of pop. Only Arch was a cheap bastard, I guess. And hell, bears don't know the difference. So it was just colored water. But people loved to pay a nickel and give that bear a bottle of pop. It was a simpler, more vicious time then. The idea of keeping a bear in a cage, a very small cage, I find it sickening. But they're all of a piece. A hustle is a hustle is a hustle is a hustle. And so, too, with the Iowa caucuses, and probably the Nevada caucuses, and anybody who caucuses, for that matter. I'm not trying to, you know, spoil Christmas for anybody, or, you know, talk about, you know, the fact that there's no Tooth Fairy or Easter Bunny. But we are not well served by this idea that our political system is something that it is not. In this case, one of the things that it is not being particularly democratic. Just isn't. Or that it's some sort of process of altruism, when in fact it is just another exercise in capitalism. It is, in fact, an upward transfer of wealth from us, you, me, we, the people, to the pockets of people who have more money than we will ever see or even imagine, and who, in large part, hate our fucking guts. They just do. Remember back before he got busted for being a sleazy, filthy, gropey, handsy, perv? Remember Les Moonves of CBS? Donald Trump may not be good for America, but he's great for CBS. I don't think I'm ever going to forget that. Nor should any of us. And it's on display with every broadcast that comes out of Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. And all too much of the rest of the for-profit news media, especially your little pissant local TV stations who will run anything that comes to them in a prepackaged format. Remember all that from the Bush administration? That hasn't gone away. And I don't know, maybe maybe I'll be as much of a simpleton as anybody else, and I'll tune in. Just to see what's happening in Iowa. When in fact, what's happening in Iowa is the same sort of thing that happens wherever they have a sign that says, "See the baby rattlers," or "Pay a nickel to give the bear a bottle of pop," or throw ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in the desperate and uncertain hope of winning a baby iguana. You only think you want the iguana. Steve in New York. It occurred to me last night, the country we broke from, you know, the one with a monarch, is more democratic than we are. Yeah. And that is why, where's Dr. Bill when I need him? The name of the, anytime you mention it now, well, you know, that was discredited. No, it wasn't. The economic theory of the Constitution came out about 1919, I think. Charles somebody. He said that the framers of the Constitution acted first and foremost in their own interests in structuring the Constitution the way they did because they wanted to protect their wealth. And it remains a compelling argument. God knows the Constitution of the United States was not structured for the benefit of anybody who was not a white property-owning male, because they were the only ones who had rights. The Constitution was not written with the people whose labor was stolen from them on a daily basis. The Constitution was not written with women in mind, despite the urgings of Abigail Adams, who wrote to John and said, "Don't forget the ladies." Abigail, by the way, was the smart one of that couple. John Adams would likely have died in as much in as dire poverty as Thomas Jefferson did, were it not for the fact that Abigail Adams, while he was running around pontificating about freedom and liberty, Abigail was back home managing the finances and investing and being a very good Hausfrau capitalist. That's how come John Quincy was able to go on to his brief presidential and far longer House of Representatives career. Oh, God. It's February, and I'm sunk up to my eyebrows in cynicism. You? I've sort of filibobstered 2 hours and 46 minutes away. And hallelujah, thank you, Anatole. Thank you so much. We're finished with fundraising. And thank you to Les. You out on the road, Les? That'll actually make $205 we raised this evening. Thank you so much. That means that Bruce's Memorial Challenge has been met for another month's beginning. Thank you very kindly, Darlene, Samson, Charlene, Les, Anatole. Thank you. Onward to Tuesday, you know. Darlene remarks, "It should be interesting to see if all of his multi-millions will buy Rush Limbaugh's out of his lung cancer." This is in no way intended to disparage anyone with that horrible disease. Yes, Abigail was the smart one. She knew how to invest. Don't forget about the ladies, John. And, you know, he got down there to Philadelphia, and everybody was sitting around swilling wine and beer and laudanum, and because you couldn't drink the water. And remember, again, this is a fact. The Constitution of the United States, about whom these senators have pontificated so stentoriously, was written by a bunch of fucked up people. You know, I'm not talking about buzzed. I'm talking about Jeff Spicoli rolling out of the van with the smoke cloud behind him and beating himself in the head with his slip-on Vans and saying, "Dude, I'm so wasted." We were a wasted nation. The Midwest was genocided and then peopled by white colonialists who were tanked, who were trashed. That charming, charming legend about Johnny Appleseed, John Chapman, he didn't take any apple trees with him and get off the Ohio River at Marietta, Ohio, and head west to plant fucking Golden Delicious and Wine Saps. Those were cider apples, baby. You couldn't bake a pie or make apple butter. They were worthless for anything but hard cider. Funny the things you find when you start rooting around in the realities of American history. Or history of any sort, really, when you come right down to it. I guess I'm starting off a new month of a little ray of sunshine. You know, it's funny, based on what I was talking about, the things that you see in your alerts. Here's an alert from BuzzFeed. What the fuck is a caucus? We break it down as Iowans kick off the process of picking the Democratic presidential nominee. I'm not even going to open it, because I guarantee you there's not going to be anything in there about there only being 41 delegates at stake tonight, because why would BuzzFeed do that? It's good for business. Don't smarten up the chumps. Just say it. And here I am, I'm Phil Bobster, 2 hours and 50 minutes away. Thank God Todd's there to make sure that we all remember that this is Conversation Radio. Hey, Todd.
Bob, I have a question.
I don't know if it got any answers, but...
All right. Well, there's this chili paste that has been acquired from...
food porn.
Real life. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, don't you, like, sign off pretty soon?
Yeah, 10 minutes.
Yeah, so, you know. But this shit, I mean, it might be important. I don't know. But this chili paste, now, I'm not making this up. Now, I bought this. Now, remember, when I moved down here, I brought a whole lot of, I went crazy. I spent a few hundred dollars on. I went to Chinatown and I bought a bunch of loose tea, different types of seasoning, all kinds of things that I knew of.
Went to Reading Central Market and loaded up on Amish pickles. I know. I've still got some pickles, dude. I loaded up. Half sours and garlic dills and bread and butters, mustard pickles. Yeah.
You see, because once you get used to that, it's like, damn.
I'm ruined. I'm grieving, dude. I am grieving. Because I asked a question yesterday of Ferg. I said, did you eat the last of my Publix sourdough? He's like, yeah, I didn't know I wasn't supposed to. I was like, no. And Agnes is sitting next to me. Saying, don't begrudge the boy food. And I'm not begrudging. I'm not complaining. I was just wondering. I went looking. It wasn't there. I'm just asking. But I won't have Publix sourdough again until I get to where there's a fucking Publix. And you know
wow.
you know how much I love that sourdough from Trader Joe's, right?
Oh, who doesn't?
Yeah, no, I'm done.
They don't understand. When you're down to your last, like enough to make a sandwich, is like look around, like
But here's the thing: that Publix sourdough is so far out beyond. Trader Joe's won't be able to catch up for a million years.
Get out of here. Well, I don't doubt it.
I mean, you got a Publix near you, right?
Well, yeah, they're. And as a matter of fact, they're all in the same street. The Publix, the Kroger, and Trader Joe's. All in the same road.
Oh, no, yeah, okay, so now I'm going to get the email from Ron saying, yeah, that and Wegmans, too.
Oh, Ron and Raleigh?
Yeah, you people. Yeah. But no, see, this is the thing. A lot of your grocery store bakeries, they get frozen dough in, and they thaw it, and they proof it, and they put it in the oven, and they say, fresh baked. But it's still frozen dough.
Okay.
That sourdough at Publix, they start with flour and water every damn day. They make it on the place.
See what you just said, though, the previous paragraph, when you're talking about where they get stuff in and they bake it there, and it's just, see, this is the problem, like, because I'm big on bagels, and they will sell you something that looks like a bagel. It's like, oh, it's got a hole in it, you know, and it has a label on it, bagel. It's not a bagel. A real bagel has to be boiled when the dough is, I mean, it's just stuff you got to do to make it to be a real bagel. And these people, there are folks who just don't understand what a real bagel is, and they accept less. And they let these people get away with this fraud. They're perpetrating the fraud. You know, that's why I will say, you know, You wouldn't know a Jew if he hit in your head, hit you in the head with a bagel.
But see, you can get real particular about things. I brought back two rounds of Publix sourdough, which they sliced for me there. Would you like it sliced, sir? Yes, please.
Damn. What?
And I brought back a sourdough baguette, which they are also happy.
Paper bag?
It was in plastic, but, you know, I didn't have them slice the sourdough baguette.
But, well, you know, Publix is upscale. I expect that from Publix stuff.
Well, it's just a damn nice grocery store, and everybody's happy.
Well,
everybody in Publix is smiling because it's employee owned.
Well, I didn't know that. But wait a minute. And this is the other thing about Publix. That is the place to go, like, when you understand what fresh, like sushi's about, or even if you don't really want to do the sushi, the California roll, you know, it's the process, but it's about the freshness. That's the place to go. They have the real fresh sushi, because you got to be careful. We had this conversation before some years ago, but you got to be careful with the sushi. But from what I've seen, the Publix, if they can't do it right, they won't offer it. You see, there's something to that. But back to the sourdough bread. Now, look, you can't go, you know, good bread is good life, and that's the truth. You can't build a good sandwich without good bread.
And the thing is, I'm gonna have to get on the Publix website and find how many hundreds of miles I'm going to have to drive to get to the nearest Publix. Because I've already sorted out that I have to drive an hour and 45 minutes to get to Food City in Bluefield, Virginia, for my Kaneka.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, it's not always available there because everybody else wants it too. So you have to just be lucky when you get there. I mean, when I left Florence a week ago last Sunday, or last Saturday rather, they had 2 loaves left. I said, not anymore. Nope, that's all that's left. Slice them, please. And grabbed it. And the thing about that baguette, though, was I hung onto that baguette like a junkyard dog with a bone. Mm-hmm. And even after it got hard, because baguettes just don't last. But the flavor was still there. Throw that little bastard in the microwave for 15 seconds, soften it up a little bit, and then go after the son of a bitch with a geologist.
You propped it up. You propped it.
Yeah, and then go after it with a geologist's hammer, okay? And Agnes and I sat in bed tearing at that baguette and having it with the last of the pimento cheese that comes from a little place called Trowbridge's on Court Street in Florence that's been open since the Wilson administration. And there's one little grocery store you can go to that sells their pimento cheese outside of the restaurant, which closes at like 5 every day.
Nice and fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds good.
I got into a habit with that sourdough down there. It gets a little too wide for the toaster, so you cut it in half and you put one slice on a half a slice to either slot in the toaster, and you don't even want to get it golden. You just want to warm it up a little bit.
Just warm it up,
and then it's still a little gummy.
And then
I'd hit it with that Kerrygold spreadable Irish butter.
Oh shit!
And then on top of that, the original old school Dundee's English orange marmalade.
Ooh, the twang! You get the twang.
It's got some bitterness to it.
Damn!
And that was just more. And that was just. Hey, it's morning.
This is the problem with good bread. Once you get accustomed to having decent bread, it's very difficult, almost impossible to go back.
Well, yeah, I mean, that stuff I was getting around here, I'm okay with it. But it's no, just no. Mm-mm.
Well,
But it all balances, Todd, because like I said, I was feeling poorly last week. And when Ging offered me offered to make me a pot of homemade Tom Yum Gung, you know, the really...
describe that.
Now, that's the red, blistering, spicy lemongrass, ginger...
Damn!
...soup. And,
that's,
you know,
what I call it.
There's a little fish stock to it, And I just hit that stuff all weekend long, and whatever it was that was ailing me didn't have a prayer.
You sound like $1 million right now.
I'm pretty much well.
Could somebody that we know was? I asked her. I said, "Well, did he? You know, did he get some pig belly soup? You know." But this is why I caught that. See, I don't want to be like Spot, but. But really, see, all right, the best Asian supermarket where I go around here, which is 40 miles away, but that's how good it is. When I was in there, there's a jar. It came from South Korea. It's this really, really hot chili paste, and it has all these warning labels. Like even a Korean, it's got warning labels on it. And they ask you, like, are you sure you want to purchase this? I mean, they will fucking ask you two or three times, are you sure you want to purchase this?
Give it.
I'm like, yes.
Is it like brick red?
Yes.
Okay, I think I tasted it.
Yes.
No. Time out. There's a decent little Japanese place over across the river, and I have recently discovered something, because the other thing, before I was able to get the Tom Yum, I was blasting their spicy ramen.
Uh-huh.
And I told one of the guys there, I said, I gotta make this hotter. And he brought me two things. One was one of those little soy sauce dishes with a bunch of ground up serrano peppers,
mm-hmm.
into which they had squirted some sriracha.
Mm-hmm.
That was good. But then he said, mm-hmm. if that's not hot enough, this. And it was this brick. And he said it's kimchi based.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this brick red paste that I mean, you know, I got crazy old man eyebrows now. Well, they're fried, okay? They're bad, you know. They're just normal eyebrows now, because that shit burnt them off from the inside out. Oh my God. So I had some chili left over from, because I've been trying to just blaze it out. I mean, it's my idea of a remedy. So I had some black bean chili from Secret Sandwich Society.
Mm-hmm.
And Agnes heated that up for me before airtime this evening. And I had some of that leftover Korean kimchi paste.
Nuclear paste.
And I mixed that into the chili. Actually, I didn't even mix it. I was getting like a dab of it on the spoon and doing a spoonful of chili. Woo! Mm. Yeah.
Boom. I mean,
yeah. It was awesome.
If that doesn't open you up, nothing. This stuff, I mean, I'm not exaggerating. Three times. Are you sure you want to purchase this? It's very stiff. And this is what I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you. That's not funny. All right, so... Like, my next thought is when I thaw out some wings, chicken wings, I'm thinking maybe three parts mayonnaise, one part that nuclear kimchi paste. It's stiff, too. This stuff is stiff, man. It's stiff like mortar. It's stiff. It's stiff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about trying to make the clear glaze barbecue sauce, like the Alabama.
Clear Ooh, and sauce. Just work a little bit of that into it?
Yes.
Oh, that would be fun.
I'm thinking that.
When you go to make your Alabama white sauce, make sure you use Duke's mayonnaise.
Well, we'll have to see. I'm just going to be honest. The line of food here, they have some pretty good stuff.
I know. Not Dukes. It's just Dukes.
It's just Dukes. But look, man, what you described, well, you sound, anyway, you sounded good. So whatever you have been eating, we all have to stay healthy. This crazy stuff going around, you know, obviously. And,
well, I'll tell you one thing I didn't do this weekend. I didn't drink any Corona beer.
Let me ask you this. What is this? I just don't get it. Because, I have, like, good friends. People I've known, I mean, my guy since I was a teenager. And, you know, they can have enough money to do whatever they want, drink whatever they want. What the fuck is it up with? Like, all right, Mexico is not known for their water, number one. Number two, there's nothing to it.
I mean, that's just a coronavirus, Corona beer. There are a bunch of idiots out there that are, yeah. I saw a funny little meme over the weekend. Inside a refrigerator, there were a bunch of Corona beers, and there were some Bud Lights with a mask on, with a medical mask on next to it.
I'm serious. There is good, just plain old American beer.
Oh, I can't tell you the last time I had a Corona. It was the 90s.
I mean, literally. I mean, the early 90s. Come on. Even the Anheuser-Busch, and it doesn't taste dark. But they have, they have a dark beer. Dark Michelob.
Oh, there's so many good local craft brews now that unless you're just in a hurry and sincerely don't give a fuck, there's no reason to buy a national, a name brand. No.
How does Bud Light sell all this beer?
Because there are a lot of people in America who don't like beer, so they buy Bud Light.
But you can do better. You can do better with your time.
I haven't said anything about, apart from mentioning the Bill Murray ad, I haven't said anything about the Super Bowl ads, but I'm still perplexed by the Bud Light ad. About
what can you describe?
They think we're ordinary American, and it was all kind of like chip on your shoulder-ish, so it's ordinary Americans, and they're showing firefighters and shit like that. And Bud Light and ordinary Americans. And I'm wondering who it is that they think is calling people names. I mean, except for me giving Steve from Georgia Stan shit for drinking Bud Light.
Well, now you're getting granular. All right, people do what they want to do. However,
been known to do that.
But if you really want to drink a light beer, try the Miller Lite. The one that, honest to God.
Todd, man, please.
What? I'm just telling you that light by Miller, that has.
Well, I mean, of all the light beers, okay, sure. I mean, of all the...
American, and we have to... Come on,
I mean, you're on a desert island, and a case of Bud Light washes up, and a case of Miller Light washes up. I will concede the point. I'll kill me a coconut crab, hope it doesn't kill me with the heart poison stuff in it, eat it, and I'll use its little claw to pry the bottle cap off the Miller Lite, and I'll wait until I'm dying of thirst before I open the Bud Light. I'll give you that.
Will you use the Coors Light to wash your hands with?
Well, yeah, because it's water.
Right.
It's all water.
The hierarchy here. Exactly. See, there's a hierarchy here. Now... And since we're talking about beer, and I have to say this because it's important. It's Valentine's Day. This is like, what happens. Now, there are a lot of people who say they don't like beer. I don't like beer. I don't, women, men, whatever. Guess what? There's a beer. There's a Belgian knockoff, okay, by Victory. And, it's a Pennsylvania brewery. I've been there. I've been right where they make it. But that's not the point. The point is, well, it is the point in a way, because I've had fresh. But Victory Golden Monkey is fucking beer champagne. People who say they don't like beer, they will like, and it's 9%, and it is so light you don't. But you can't even tell.
Yeah, but well, I'm, you know, from my standpoint, I should tell you that we found out that Agnes likes sake, so I've been on kind of
that helped
clear things out too.
Man. Oh man, look, you guys gotta go to Chinatown, baby. Listen. I know Chinese, Japanese. I know it's not this.
What I was surprised to find out is there's a shitload of really, really fine sake being made in, wait for it, California.
I'm not surprised. Well, come on. Think about it. That's not surprising, but the world of sake. Listen, right before I moved, man, that was my thing. That was my thing because sake is like in the middle of beer, wine, and liquor. Because it's strong, right? And there's different kinds. Some sake you drink at room temperature. Some sake is drunk cold, and some is drunk warm, mm-hmm. like body temperature. And once you get into it. Like I didn't know that when I started drinking it, but then the local place where I was getting it, they were like, "Well, we're having this distributor come over, you know, come back." So we did taste test. We went over there and did this and that. But oh my God, sake is the shit, man! Especially with fucking bong it.
And the big thing now. The big up and comer is sparkling sake.
Oh, see, I don't even, man. But sake is special.
Well, part of the healing process was to get the lovely Agnes to throw back a little sake, and it made a difference. And she tried some Fuji apple sake cold.
Did you get the Geekomon? What is it?
No, the Geekicon. That stuff's bong water. I've done my sake researching. I was the horn research department for sake just to figure out what all these words meant. she likes hot and you know for the purposes of this cure. You wanted the Geikikan, and you wanted it so damn hot you could barely get it down your throat.
Okay.
And it was a cure, and I'm being hard on it, but no, I got her a taste of ice cold Fuji apple sake.
Damn, that sounds great.
Oh, it was.
Shit, where did you acquire that?
Same little Japanese restaurant that brought me the little tub of that hateful Korean kimchi paste.
Yo, that paste, man.
They work with me because they know that I want it hot. So they brought me the little thing of togarashi powder, I forget what, and they brought me that paste and they brought me the serranos, and they said, "We ain't got anything hotter." I said, "This will be all right."
They didn't make you sign a form?
Nope. Randy in PA says, "Victory beer is made in my hometown."
Oh. Been there. It used to be a Pepperidge Farm Bakery. You know that?
No.
And Parksburg is a train station. Like, if you want to get back to Philly, you're all drunk, you went on the train. Got to go back to it's Parksburg, but Downingtown. It's in Downingtown. But anyway, I mean that's where it started. I may have a bigger place now.
When you get closer to it, and the weather's already going to start getting nice for you soon, I guess.
It was like spring today, man. The music, man, it was crazy.
Oh, we got up to 65.
You're in the mountains.
Yeah. Yep, 65 and sunny. But when we get closer to making that white sauce, we'll get on Skype and everything, and we'll walk through.
I'll get you. Okay, I got you.
Yeah. And you do your chicken on the grill, put some hickory smoke to it for a little bit, just a little bit, and then you finish grilling it over heat, and you paint on that sauce. Huh! And it disappears. Nobody knows it's there.
Well, yeah. It's that glaze. Right. So, right.
Wait a minute. You done got on the wrong side of Darlene in Connecticut.
Oh, no.
Hang on. I'm sorry, young man, Todd from South Carolina. I'm a straight girl from snobby Connecticut, and I love beer. Granted, I can't get the good stuff, i.e. real German beer around here, so I settle for a Lagunitas IPA. I know, Bob, that'll make you cringe, but it's the best a girl could do around here, and I like the bitter taste. And good on you, Agnes. I like sake, too. Uh-oh, when we get the horn in together, there may have to be some sake on the table.
It changed me, it really did,
when you get the good stuff, it's really, really clean.
It's different. It's clean.
It doesn't leave you hating yourself the next day.
And so now
I've discovered this stuff called, I've got a little bit of OCD, and I study things to death, and then I move on to something else. there's something out there called, oh, Jesus, help me, Sake Junmai Nigiri, I think.
Whoa.
Or Nigori. But what it is it's unfiltered sake. And so it's cloudy.
Wow, I never heard of that.
Yeah, you serve it cold and it's cloudy.
Hmm.
And some of them come in like little pinkish colored bottles. This one was called Snow Maiden. And it's from Japan, from a brewery in Kyoto. And it's named after a koi fish that lived to be 226 years old.
No shit. Oh, shoot. Now, Kyoto, they're known for their beef, the good steak, right?
That's Kobe.
Oh, Kobe. Okay. Right. That's right. That's Kobe. Now, the sake, I wonder if folks in Japan, if they go on sake tours, like we go on these craft beer tours.
Oh, I imagine so. The bourbon tours in October in Kentucky.
Yeah.
Where somebody else does all the driving and you just drive from distillery to distillery to distillery and you have tasting after tasting after tasting.
Because,
and then be in Kentucky at the end, there's a knife fight.
and if Mitch is around, then he can be the referee.
There it is. Ralph's is always out there ready to help with the Horn ad hoc research department. Nigori, Nigori, Nigori.
The sake?
Yeah, cloudy or milky sake. Unfiltered Nigori sake is a brew that's been coarsely filtered to allow the unfermented rice particles to remain in the sake to increase feeling and flavor. Always served chilled, Nigori is a popular bar sake that pairs well with international spicy fare and appeals for those looking for direct flavors.
See, I want some of that now. Damn it. And that sounds healthy. Whole grain. That sounds like whole grain.
I got to work on my pronunciation here. Hakutsuru Sayuri. Little Lily.
Oh.
Komoitsumi. Nigori Ginjo, Summer Snow. Strawberry. Strawberry Nigori. Peach River.
Oh, with the flower. Damn. See, that's got to be healthy. Come on.
This is from a website called truesaki.com. Let's see. We cannot ship to the following states. let's see. Fuck you, North Dakota, New Hampshire, Utah, Mississippi, Alabama, Vermont, Kentucky, South Dakota.
Alabama.
West Virginia and South Carolina ain't in there, Todd. Oh,
don't
wow.
Let them
okay,
know.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay. No, this ain't happening. Gozenshu Bodemoto Junmai Usu Nigori Bodemoto Nigori of the Ancients, $34 a bottle. That ain't happening.
For what? For $7.50?
Yeah.
Okay.
Scott in San Diego says, you and Todd, instead of hitting the bottle, you guys are socking the sake. Ah. Just, okay, wait. Just a very bad.
Oh, I'm laughing because of the cadence of the bell.
It was a very, very weak kind of. Hey, Todd, I got to get out of here, brother. But we got shit to work on now.
That shit was too fucking funny. Oh,
I live to serve. He hung up just and he couldn't even say goodbye. He was laughing too hard. That's a beautiful thing. Okay. First broadcast of February is under our belts. And hopefully I'll continue to be on the mend. Gosh, we'll be back tomorrow evening to talk about the stunning results from the Iowa caucuses. By the way, Brother Deacon Asa said, I'm calling you out, Bob. Calling you out. The BuzzFeed article does mention the number of Iowa delegates. Well, at least they were willing to smarten up. Good for you, BuzzFeed. I'm actually proud of you. So, back tomorrow to talk about something that didn't matter as much as it matters to the people who are cashing the checks. Let's be fair. Odoki? Yeah. So thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air, both as subscribers and as a la carte contributors to the program, or both. Thank you so much. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you choose so to do. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks this evening to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.Live. Sorry about the program buffering up a minute ago. I corrected it as quickly as I noticed. We really do need to expand this studio so that things can all be in front of me at the same time. Never mind. We'll talk about that another day. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Judy Bonds, who I talked about at the beginning of the program, headed Coal River Mountain Watch for a long time. And we miss her deeply every day. And always, 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 Gina. It's all for you. Later, y'all.